If this congregation is like any other congregation, there are people in the pews today that had a hard time getting up out of bed, getting dressed to come to a building alone. Others came with troubled minds because of the storms in their lives that they are facing. Again, it seems like alone. Children are concerned about their parents, and parents are concerned about their children. Let's see what Jesus teaches us about grief and loss from John chapter 11. This morning, first of all, we want to spend some time with the text and look at some of the things that, that Jesus teaches us in regard to the text as he was trying to spend time with his disciples and then Mary and Martha. And then secondly, we want to make the application to our lives. As Jesus dealt with Mary and Martha, we can as well try to help others when they deal with the storms of their life. First of all, in the text, Jesus regards the idea of death as sleep. Because very quickly in the text, he begins to have a discussion with the disciples about Lazarus being asleep. They think, of course, verses 11 through verse 14, that he's referring to going to sleep at night. But Jesus then says very succinctly, verse 14, no, he's dead, but I'm going to wake him. In a world today that teaches that there's nothing beyond the grave, thus we can go for all the gusto and live the life that we want to live here because after a while, after we die, there's nothing there. We don't get that idea from Jesus Christ because he's talking about something that is someone that is asleep that will wake up in the other place called eternity. You may recall that the only other writer in the New Testament that deals with that same phrase is the Apostle Paul. 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, verses 13 through verse 18, he reminds those brethren of Thessalonica who are so bothered because their loved ones are dying that the Lord will bring those who are asleep with him at the beginning of the resurrection. Jesus regards death as sleep, not the end. But he also saw this as a time to deepen the faith in regard to the disciples, then Martha, then the group of the Jews that come together. And the whole point that Jesus makes in the text is I want you to believe. I want you to believe in me. I want you to believe that I'm the Son of God. I want you to believe that through me, wonderful things can take place. I realize today that those of our loved ones that have passed were not raised by Jesus like Lazarus was raised. Brethren, that will happen in time to come. Jesus wants us to have faith in him. But you may also recall that the reactions of those that are dealing with this grief, somewhat different. Martha hears that the Lord is coming. And if you'll read the text there in verse 20 and again in verse 28, she leaves the Jews and leaves the house where Martha and Mary are, and she goes out to meet the Lord. She begins to talk to him. Mary is in the house. And then later on, she leaves to go be with Jesus. We made the point last evening that regardless of even if we deal with the very same kind of grief loss in life, we all will grieve differently. We all will grieve uniquely. It's because of the way we're made. But Jesus saw this time as a time to emphasize the resurrection. You see, I think he knew what he was going to do. But Martha and Mary didn't have an idea. They talked about the resurrection at the end of time. Jesus was talking about it immediately. And for us today, almost 2,000 years removed from this narrative, it's important for us to remember that the end is not over. In fact, life is just beginning on the other side. And when that resurrection takes place, as the Bible says so succinctly in 1 Corinthians chapter 15, we will be ever with the Lord if we've been faithful and saved by his amazing grace. As the narrative moves from Mary and Martha talking to the Lord and him coming to the tomb, you may recall that when they come to the tomb, there's a large stone there. Now, I know Jesus and the disciples could have moved the stone away, but Jesus saw this as an opportunity to let someone else do something for a moment. And they moved the stone, even though Martha says, "Lord, he's been dead for 4 days, and his body is already decaying." When it comes to any time of grief loss, as we will say in just a few moments, we need others to be there, to help, to listen, to encourage, to remind us that we're not alone in our grief. In verses 41 and verse 42, Jesus saw this as a time to pray. I know sometimes it may seem like that prayer maybe the last resort. But I think it's something that we need to always remind ourselves of, the tremendous privilege that we have to go before the throne of God, to let God know of our pain, of the storms that we're facing. And on this occasion, you may recall that Jesus, as it were, says, "God, you know, and I know what I'm about to do, but for the sake of these people here, I am praying." We never know in what situation we may find ourselves in that we need to pray. The end result of this miracle was that the word of God spread and people began to talk. Now, unfortunately, some of them talk negatively. I found it very fascinating that he raised someone from the dead. No one could question that at all. And while many people believe, the text tells us there in verse 46, others went to the Pharisees and basically said, "What are you going to do about this? What are you going to do with this man? I mean, a miracle was right before their eyes." But they wanted to get rid of him. And any time of grief loss, when we as God's family, as the church, as individuals, try to help others, others will notice that, whether we do it well or whether we do it poorly. And hopefully and prayerfully, people will give honor to God in regard to what we say and what we do. Now that we've looked at the text for just a moment, I want us to look at 4 things that Jesus did here in this occasion that you and I can do as well. Regardless of what the loss is, whether it be a death loss, whether it be some loss of something significant, something important, some relationship, whatever it is, here are 4 simple things that Jesus did that you and I can do as well, as we notice how Jesus interacted with Mary and Martha. The first one, be real. Be genuine. Now, you know what John 11:35 says. I'm not going to ask anyone to be shamed by raising your hand when you were a child in Bible class and you forgot to do your memory work and you quoted John 11, 35, didn't you? We all did. Jesus wept. But what we don't understand is that that is a very expressive term in the original language. There are eight different words for the word cry or weeping in the New Testament. In verse 33 of the text, Mary and others are bawling their eyes out. That's the word in the original language as they are coming to be with Jesus there on that occasion. But when we turn to John chapter 11, verse 35, it's a totally different Greek word. And it means to cry on the inside. There were no tears coming from Jesus, but he was so torn up. The word itself refers to something like a horse snorting. You're so just frustrated. And that's exactly what Jesus felt when he saw the anguish and the pain that Mary and Martha and the Jews and the fact that they had called for him to come early and he had not come early for a reason. He was just torn up on the inside. Jesus wept. But you see, what was important was for them to understand how he felt about them. And I think the lesson for each one of us is that when we are with our church family, when we're with our own family, and we feel the frustration and the pain and the anguish and all the other things that we can mention, it's okay to be real and genuine around them. Feel what they are feeling. I mentioned 1 Thessalonians 4, 13 through 18. The brethren in Thessalonica had a mistaken idea that Jesus was coming quickly, but their loved ones were dying, perhaps of a natural death situation, and they felt incorrectly that for that reason, their loved ones would not be able to go and be with the Lord. So as Paul begins to remind them and tell them that that's incorrect, you may recall that he says that they are to not grieve or they're not to sorrow as those who have no hope. But in the context of that passage, he did not say it's wrong for you to be sorrowful. It's okay to cry. It's okay not to cry. It's okay for us to feel our grief, to experience our grief. And when grieving people see us as real and genuine people, they will feel far more comfortable to grieve in our presence. Be real. Secondly, be quiet. You see, in verse 21, Martha has left town and gone out to where Jesus is. That's what the text tells us. And she says, Lord, if you would have been here, my brother would not have died. I think likely she said that a little more forcefully than I did. She was agitated. We had sent you a message, Lord. Why are you so late getting here? And did you notice that in verse 32, that Mary, without knowing what Martha had said, said the exact same thing. Lord, if you would have been here, my brother would not have died. Notice verse 22, verse 33. You do not find Jesus getting on to them for their lack of faith or being ugly toward him. He allowed them their grief. When we are dealing with people that are torn up because of the grief pain that they are dealing with, your presence and not your words will be more and greatly appreciated. The Joe Baileys, in a period of several years, lost three of their sons to death. Mr. Bailey, in his book, The View from a Hearse, shared his feelings when one of his children died. He said, "I was sitting torn by grief. Someone came and talked to me of God's dealings, of why it happened, of hope beyond the grave. He talked constantly. He said things that I knew were true. I was unmoved except to wish that he would go away. He finally did. Another one came and sat beside me. He did not talk. He did not ask me leading questions. He just sat beside me for a period of time, listened when I said something, answered briefly, prayed simply, and left. I was moved. I was comforted. I hated to see him go. In a time of grief and sorrow, be quiet. Number three, be supportive. You see, in that particular passage, verse 31, and again in verse 34, 4 days after Lazarus has died, a group of the Jews are there with Mary and Martha, spending time with them, letting them know, "We're here to help you." Here are the disciples and Jesus coming to be with them. What are they doing? They're showing their support. They're letting them know, you do not have to grieve by yourself. When anyone of this church family deals with grief of any kind, we need to be there for them. Out of love, out of genuine concern. Because you see, there are few things that will heal wounded hearts better than the balm of a supportive embrace. Charles Swindoll tells of a situation years ago in one of his books. When a little girl had lost a playmate in death, a neighborhood child, several weeks later, the little girl is late to supper, and when she gets there, she is reprimanded by the father who's been waiting with the rest of the family. "Where have you been?" I went over to Mrs. Jones' house. And the father gets mad and said, "Why would you go over there? You know what has happened. You know what they're going through. What could you have done to have helped?" And the little girl said, "I just wanted to go over there and let her know how much I miss her daughter." And said she started crying. The mom did. And I got up in her lap, and I cried with her. That's being supportive. Number four, be available. See, chapter 12 is a continuation of the narrative of chapter 11. Lazarus has been raised. And here's Jesus and the disciples coming to eat with them there in Bethany, spending time with them. Can you imagine the questions that Lazarus must have had? Remember where he had been in the afterlife. And yet here's Jesus after the situation, as it were, saying, "I know you've got questions. I know you're wondering why all this happened. I want you to know that I'm here. I'm available to your needs. I'm not going anywhere." I think it's important in any kind of situation of grief loss that we convey the same message to those people that are grieving. We're available to you. When everyone else leaves the door, we're going to be the ones that are coming in the door. We're going to be there to stay through with you. If you don't remember anything else I say in this lesson, please remember the very next statement I'm about to make. It has been reported that within 2 weeks of any kind of grief loss in life, 97% of people will quit visiting that family. And yes, you heard right, 97%. And for those who are grieving, you know that it's after 2 weeks that the real shock of grief begins to wear off. It's after 2 weeks that you begin to sort of wake up and realize what this loss is beginning to mean to you. And you look around and you wonder, where'd everybody go? Jesus wanted them to know that he was available. You see, we learn from Jesus that when we deal with grief, we need to allow those individuals to express their grief. They may say things that don't make sense. They may say things that they don't mean. They may think things that seem to be a little bit out of kilter for them. But Jesus wanted Mary and Martha to know, I'm here. I'm not going anywhere. You can say and be what you want to be. When we allow people to express their grief, it allows them to gain an insight as they go through their own grief journey. And the problem today that we have in our world today is many are not allowed to express their grief, and thus they grieve alone. But you know, that shouldn't happen. Because not only did Jesus show his love and his care for Mary and Martha then, but folks, we must do the same today. Because we are an extension of Jesus in everything that we do. In the storms of life that we face, who will be there with us? And we know that God will be there. But what about God's children? What about God's family? A long time ago, almost 2,000 years, as someone earlier said in regard to the Lord's Supper, Jesus went to the cross. And he stayed there for each one of us. And by that death and his resurrection and the beginning of his church, salvation is found in and through Jesus Christ. Could it be in this audience this morning there's someone that needs to become a New Testament Christian? That needs to start their walk with Christ? Maybe you've done that, but you need to come back and start again with him in regard to your life. Or could it be that in this audience, that there's someone that's hurting, that just needs to let this church family know, I need your prayers. I need your help. I need your love. If you have those needs, come right now together we stand and sing the invitation song together.